Last orders at the bar, please, everyone. Last orders. Ah, go on then. Since it's Christmas, let's have a lock-in. Hello and welcome to Against the Law, the ancient history podcast that aims to separate historical fact from fiction. Today has gone a little bit squiffy as we'll be drinking a toast to the ancient world. Yes, don't be surprised if we sound tipsy as we dive into the merry history of alcohol. A Roman history nerd called Xenia walks into a bar, holds up two fingers and says, "Five glasses of wine, please." Then, an ancient Greek fan called Meg walks into a bar and orders a Pythagorean cup of Kikion. The bartender asks if she's happy with it and she replies, "My cup overfloweth." Which is funny because, it's funny because a Pythagorean cup is a kind of ancient Greek sort of like practical joke cup. And if you fill it too much, it'll empty out all of its contents. Anyway, Barney's order is next, which, since he's a fan of the ancient Near East, he poses in a riddle translated from ancient Akkadian. "In your mouth and your urine constantly stared at you, the measuring vessel of your lord, what is it?" Can you guess the answer? It's beer. I didn't really get it either. I'm Flo, and I'm not an expert in anything ancient, but I am excited to learn all about the ancient world of booze.
In honour of the festive spirit, I'm absolutely steaming at the moment, and that is thanks to a contemporary beverage known as Hooch Pink Lemonade flavour. Hooper's Hooch, which is often simply referred to as Hooch, is an alcopop, which is a drink commonly associated with young people, university students and the like. And this beverage dates back to the 1990s. Although, fun historical fact for you, it's created by the company Hooper's, which is the same company who invented the hot water bottle.
And they've done so much for us.
For me personally, honestly, about 90% of my personality is thanks to Hooper's.
Wow.
So, Xenia, can you introduce us a little bit about your drink of choice and how it's relevant to the ancient Greeks? No. Ancient Romans.
Sure. Well, I'm drinking my favourite alcoholic beverage, which is white wine. The Romans also had wine. Pliny the Elder says that there were four different colours of wine. White, brown, blood-coloured, black. So that tells us that they were maybe making their wine slightly differently than how we would now. I believe that white wine involves skinning the grapes before you mush them down and then ferment them. And with red wine, you keep the skins on the grapes. And I like white wine partly for the flavour, and the other reason is very vain, actually. It's because I don't want to stain my teeth. And I already drink coffee, and I'd much rather give up red wine than I would want to give up coffee.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Barney, what are you drinking?
So I've had to go for a bit of a mixed bag, partly because of what's available to me at the moment. So just before this, I've chugged my way through a beer, which is obviously relevant to the ancient Near East, because they love beer in Mesopotamia. People were paid in malted grains and maybe beer in ancient Sumer, and it was one of the main ways of getting calories. So I had that, and then I've also got a grain spirit here with me that I'm gonna take a few sips with, but I probably won't be chugging through the show. It's actually Chinese. It's baijiu. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of baijiu before, but it's made from sorghum.
Wow, what's that?
Yeah, so sorghum. Sorghum. Sorghum comes from all over. It's actually the fifth most important cereal in the world.
After Special K.
After
Special K is the top four. Sorry. Barney, as you were.
No. Yeah, I think because it's an ancient grain, I thought it was relevant to my ancient world and their love of grains. Since, Mesopotamia and Western Asia in general were responsible for the cultivation and domestication of many of the grains that we know and love today. So that's why I've got Baijiu as well. And then I've also got, and this has got no relevance at all to the ancient Near East, but again, it's what I've got on hand. I've got a bottle of Magnum Tonic Wine, which is a Jamaican beverage.
Lovely.
I love the concept of tonic, like alcoholic beverages, like Synatogen Tonic Wine.
It's close to Synatogen, yeah,
yes.
Definitely.
Cydrax is a tonic cider as well, which is meant to calm the nerves.
Well, I don't know, maybe this is a question for Xenia and Meg, but could wine ever have been used either as a medicine or as a vector for medicine at any point in the ancient world?
Yeah, absolutely. The Greeks used wine for medicine, for religion, for partying, basically everything.
Just like my mum.
Legend.
If we've got any listeners who suffer from migraines, it worked for me once. A double shot of whiskey, neat, helped with a migraine that I was having. Wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but medically, it was great.
Yeah, they are natural painkillers, actually, aren't they? When I dislocated both my shoulders, the doctors, when they put my shoulders back in their sockets, they gave me a certain drug, a painkiller, to knock me out. And they were like, okay, what's your beverage of choice? I was like, wine. And he said, this shot right here of painkiller is worth 3/4 of a bottle of wine.
Ooh.
He was right. I was very, very happy.
That's huge.
Meg, I'm going to ask you, what are you drinking today?
So, I am drinking a beverage called Greek grog, and I've made it myself. I've brewed it myself. Brewing is a strong word. I poured 3 liquids into a mug. But this is something that the Greeks might have drunk at various points in their history. And it's a combination of wine and beer and mead, so sort of honey wine. And we don't have a lot of evidence about Greek grog, but there's various sort of archaeological and literary evidence which suggests that some kind of mixture of these drinks was drunk by the Greeks. And so I've mixed, we coincidentally, unplanned, got given a bottle of mead last week as a Christmas present. So I had mead on hand, which I don't normally, so I thought that is too good an opportunity to pass up. I'm going to combine them. If it was doing it in the true spirit, I would grate cheese on top, but I'm not doing that. But I haven't actually tried it yet. I've prepared this drink, but I haven't given it a go.
Can we have a live glug?
Yep. Okay. I'll lean in to the microphone. Ooh, it's not bad actually. It's not bad. I didn't put very much beer in, so.
Tasting notes.
It basically tastes like a sweet wine with a sort of slightly bitter, which is the beer. The only thing I had was an IPA, which is probably not very realistic.
Hipster Greeks.
Yeah, it's brewed in a small brewery in Brixton. But yeah, good. It's not bad. I'm going to enjoy this.
Nice.
But I'm presuming that you don't have cheese on it, though.
I didn't put the cheese on, and I have to say, it's mainly wine and mead, which you'd imagine would go quite well together because the mead just sort of sweetens the wine. I had a splash of IPA.
What kind of cheese would they have put on top? Parmesan? Edam?
Goat's cheese, if you can bear to think of it. And sometimes milk. Sometimes milk would go into this.
Ooh. Whoa, milk and wine and...
Possibly not all at once, but that's one of the ingredients that make up. It's called cacaon, which means a sort of mixture of things. And it can sometimes be medicinal, it can sometimes be the sort of stories about it being drunk by peasants at parties. And it would, yeah, just be a kind of mixture of things like wine, barley, honey, goat's cheese, herbs.
So cacaon is like slightly original, it's like the original cocktail then, cacaon.
Yeah, exactly. It literally means just a mixture. And it's a bit random. It kind of, different sources suggest different things. So what we have evidence for it from Homer.
Don't!
Where a wounded soldier is given this cacaon, this mixture, which is now referred to as Greek grog. And in Homer, it is wine, barley, and honey and goat's cheese. So it's not quite clear kind of what format those things come in, but that's pretty much what I'm drinking here, just fermented. And so that's a sort of medicinal thing. It's part of treatment for him. But we also have evidence from earlier than Homer, earlier than the Iliad, which is that in sort of Mycenae, in some of the earlier Greek civilizations, and Crete, I've talked about these before, it's sort of where we get the Linear B language and like types of pottery and stuff, sort of pre-Bronze Age collapse civilizations. They found these massive storage jars. And at one palace, I think they found 4,000 litres worth of storage jars, which suggests a lot of wine was being consumed. But in these wine jars, they also found evidence of beer, basically of some kind of barley-based alcoholic drink. And it's not clear, I think there's debates about whether or not the jars were being reused or whether both the barley and the wine were being put in the same jar. But the evidence from later on, the Homeric cocaon, which is also referenced in other literature, suggests that it might have been all in the same jar, a kind of cocktail of alcohols. And I was reading an article which said about this, these storage jars. It said, why would a small farming community need so much wine? Which I thought was quite judgy, you know? Like, let them live. Let them make their horrible cocaine.
Very judgy. I live in the West Country and I can confirm that we do get through a lot of booze.
Yeah, small farming communities. Yeah.
In the UK, historically, certain farms would pay their workers in tokens that could be used in exchange for cider rather than cash, which is, again, a little bit like Barney, you said, you could pay someone in beer or grain alcohol.
Yep. Yes, that's a... that's a very early Mesopotamian thing to do. There are these proto-cuneiform tablets that you can find quite readily on the internet. I think there's a classic one in the British Museum, which is a rations tablet. And so it has a number of numerical markings plus the signs for ration and various different types of beer stamped on it. So the assumption is that this was a record of who was being paid what amount in what kind of beer or malted grain. It would be a pretty good thing to be remunerated in, because beer, as they had it, isn't the same kind of like filtered and purified like clear lagers that we have now. It was like a thick, gloopy, almost like liquid bread is a good way to think of it. And the malting process actually increases the calorific content of the barley, and so they were getting a lot more out of the harvests. By turning their grains into beer. And then also the alcohol, and like it would have been low level of alcohol, like not as high as we think of beer now, would have killed all the microorganisms, so drinking beer was preferable to drinking water. But then it wasn't strong enough that you would necessarily become drunk or like too dependent on it, so it was sort of like the Goldilocks beer, really. Like nourishment, you know, that drink in a can.
Fermented bread sauce.
Yes, yeah. Or that's a Christmas thing I don't think I want to try my hand at.
In more recent history, throughout Europe, is what I know of. It might be worldwide, but throughout Europe, people used to drink beer instead of water because it was considered less harmful, and it was called small beer, and it had a really low percentage of alcoholic volume. So you could quite happily drink beer throughout the day and avoid getting sick like you would from water from a contaminated well. So that sort of has extended through medieval Europe as well.
And I think that sort of drink still exists, not strictly as beer, but kvass, which you get in Central Asia, is like a beer-based low-alcoholic fizzy drink. And even in the Middle East and in Egypt, they used to make something called bouza, which is nice. You use the leftover bread to make a drink out of, and it's like 0.5% alcoholic.
Is that where we get the word booze from?
I looked into this the other day. I don't think it is, but it really sounds like it. And I think a lot of like 19th century explorers, when they heard tell of bouza, they were like, ah, this must be where we get our word booze. But they were already using the word booze.
Interesting.
Yeah, I couldn't find a definitive etymological answer, but I'm erring on the side of no, because coincidence is never a good etymology argument.
So I'm quite partial to a glass of Merlot or a Malbec. I'm a red wine sort of person. Zenyu, you were talking a little bit about different wines. So if I was transported magically back to ancient Rome, could I just waltz into anywhere and order myself a nice glass of wine?
Ooh. So it depends where you're walking into. If you were walking into a sort of Roman-style pub, a taberna, a popina, sometimes they're called, then yes, you could get yourself a cup of wine of varying quality. I mean, just as in pubs today, to be honest, the more you pay for your glass, the better quality wine you're going to get. But yeah, you could walk into a pub, you could get a glass of wine. And that's pretty much the only kind of drink that they would have been serving. They also did some food, usually fried sausages, things like that. But the thing is, pubs in the ancient world weren't particularly like... They were places that people who tended to be lower class would go. We've said on the podcast a few times that Roman society was extremely classist. So this is where sort of blue-collar workers would go to have a drink to end their day. If you walked into someone's dinner party, on the other hand, the way you consumed wine would be very different. And in fact, the rules around like wine drinking and wine etiquette were different depending on whether you were in a dinner party context or in a pub context.
So essentially, I'd have to learn an entire social etiquette to know whether I could waltz somewhere and grab some wine.
Yeah, sort of. Like, you could still walk in somewhere and grab some wine. You just have to be aware that you'd be in a fairly rowdy environment with a certain group of people. And if that's your vibe, then awesome. Like, I'm sure you'll have a really good time. In fact, there's a really lovely tombstone for she's called a popinaria, which means she's someone who owns and runs a popina, a pub, effectively, a tavern. And her name is Amemone, not Anemone, but Amemone.
Finding Nemo moment now.
Yes. And she had like a reputation that extended way beyond her city, which was Tivoli, just outside Rome. It's said that she drew many customers to her pub because of what a lovely reputation she had. So I'm sure if you went into her pub, she'd welcome you and pour you a glass of wine.
Oh. Like an ancient Barbara Windsor.
Yes. Yeah.
Xenia, mm-hmm. would Amemone have been involved in the brewing process as well?
Probably not. So she would have been buying in her wine that would have come in from farmsteads all over Italy, but also in Spain and Gaul, as in modern day France, which is, actually kind of where, you know, France has like such a good reputation as old world wines. It's got a huge, vine viticulture reputation. So that's mainly thanks to the Romans who exported viticulture to Gaul. So she would have been importing it in from there. The wine was made on these huge estates called latifundia. Oh dear, now that I've had wine, I want to get into all sorts of really niche things. I really need to stick to my script. Okay.
No, stray.
Go niche.
But you might go on a tirade, as I'm wont to do if I've had some booze. I was just going to say, Amemone sounds really lovely. However, I know that in Pompeii, there was an innkeeper who was not particularly well-liked. So I love the graffiti in Pompeii. I think it's absolutely indicative of how we never change as people. We're always going to find a way to write rude things in visible places. And there's some graffiti on the woodworking shop of Potitus, which is next to a bar. And the graffiti says, "Would that you pay for all your tricks, innkeeper. You sell us water and keep the good wine for yourself." Which I quite like. I like that someone's giving like an ancient Yelp review on the outside, wall where someone sees it before they go in.
But can I just jump in with the water? ancient wine, ancient Greek wine, is mostly water. That's how they made it. It was always diluted. So if you're having wine in the symposium, which is the sort of dinner party, symposium literally means drinking together. And that's the sort of, that's for upper class men to meet, drink wine, have chats about politics and poetry and everything. You might have a sort of cup of straight wine to start your evening, but after that, it's got to be heavily diluted, about 3-1 or 3-2 portions of water to wine. So all wine is, in fact, basically water. That's a little against the law for you.
Is that true of everywhere?
Well, yeah, the Romans did also sometimes dilute their wine. So wine in the ancient world, especially good wine, was slightly stronger than the kind we drink now. So normally our wine is sort of between 11.5 to 13%, and their wine was sort of 14 to 15%. So yes, they would have watered it down a bit, but the Romans mixed all sorts with their wines, and actually they really liked very, very sweet drinks, a bit like Meg, you were saying with your sort of the sweetness of your cacaon. So as a, you know how sometimes before, like if you're at a fairly fancy dinner, you have a sherry before dinner. It's like your pre-dinner drink. Well, the Romans would mix honey with some wine and serve that as their pre-dinner drink. And then they'd have watered down wine during the meal. And yeah, you might have like port after your meal, if you're doing a posh one, and that's a similar system for the Romans. They'd then maybe have like a posca or something, which is like wine mixed with spices and honey and maybe a bit of milk as well.
That sounds like a cacaon. That sounds like a similar thing to the Greeks.
It's getting there. That could also be medicinal. That was kind of drunk as almost like a mulled wine equivalent at Christmas. Yeah. Well, not Christmas, but like Saturnalia, which is when the Romans celebrated, yeah, their Christmas, their sort of winter festival.
If someone is perpetually drunk currently, there's certain feelings that we have towards that. In the ancient world, was there alcoholism? Was alcohol sufficiently drunk enough to develop alcoholism?
Oh, I don't know if we can say whether or not there was alcoholism. I feel like possibly yes. But the Greeks had they thought that beer was very bad. They thought that beer was for barbarians and for effeminate men, interestingly, which I think is almost the opposite of what we have now, as beer is a kind of manly drink and wine is more of a feminine drink. But they did sort of culturally wanted, you know, alcohol in moderation. And that was this dilution. Anyone who drank straight wine, which, as Enya was saying, would have been stronger than our wine, but not that much stronger, like, it, you know, still less strong than a spirit. That would be seen as a sort of, you know, crazy behaviour to be drinking straight wine. And there's a really nice, there's a fragment from a play that we only have in fragments, but about a symposium. And there's a description of these sort of craters or crater of wine, which is like the big mixing bowl. And you know, you start off with one at the beginning and then you might mix another crater of wine. And there's this, I'll just read it out to you. This is a kind of description of how drunk it's acceptable to get and what happens with each stage of drunkenness. So one crater is for good health, the second for love and pleasure. The third is for sleep. And when they have drunk it, the wise wander homewards. The fourth is no longer ours, but belongs to arrogance. The fifth leads to shouting. The sixth to drunken revel. The seventh to a black eye. The eighth to a summons by the law, the ninth to bile, the tenth to madness, in that it makes people throw things. And I think that's quite a good description of a night out.
Tag yourselves.
Yeah, literally.
I'm between 4 and 5.
Okay, you're between arrogance and shouting. Right, is that right now, Flo, or kind of generally your attitude?
Honestly, right now, all I can think about is how much I need a wee. Is that a number? Is that 4.5?
I think that might be 6. Maybe drunken revel could include, you know, public urination, possibly.
Okay.
Or a summons to the law nowadays in some countries. That would be illegal.
If you're enjoying the podcast so far, why not support us on Patreon? Our different support tiers can get you merch, shout-outs, and even personalised content. If you want to hear more from Against the Law, find us on Twitter @AgainstLaw, and we're on Instagram and TikTok. Search for @AgainstTheLawPodcast.
Yeah, well, I'm a woman, I'm drunk. Anyone got any stories about women and drunkenness?
The lived experience of being a woman and drinking.
Well, for a couple of classes of Roman women, that would not have been possible as a lived experience, even as early as the...
Can I guess that lower class women wouldn't have been acceptable to be drunk?
So no, it's higher class women. With lower class women, again, we have Amemone, who actually runs a pub, and in taverns you would have women serving, you'd have women drinking, you'd have women working, but also women who worked in pubs were seen as sexually available. You know, in a society that really wanted to categorize us women and put them into nice little boxes and work out, you know, what was acceptable behavior as a woman and what was other behavior as a woman, this is quite an important distinction for the Romans. So it's higher class women, and these laws, so it was literally illegal for women to drink at all. And this goes back right back to Romulus. Apparently they could maybe drink some very weak, sweet wines.
Well, that's a bit naff. So like...
Hooch.
Yeah, hooch. That's kind of mean.
Like, you could very comfortably, in Roman law, divorce your wife if you came home, kissed her, and smelt alcohol on her breath. That was grounds for divorce.
You stink of booze.
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
Those poor women.
It is really sad. And like there are some really actually extremely vile punishments for women who were caught drinking that are like genuinely happened. It's quite sad.
I feel like it's normally the Assyrians who are doing the horrible punishments of women. So I'm not glad. I'm obviously distressed to hear, but you know, at least the heat is off the ancient Near East for once.
Yeah, they were not kind. But women did attend dinner parties at which wine would be served. It's just presumably they weren't allowed to drink any of it.
That goes against what I had in my head, where everyone was sort of drinking wine with dinner and laying down on their side and not vomiting in the vomitariums, because that's not what they're for.
Oh, there are some vase paintings of people being sick, though. And
I'm drinking too much.
Yeah, well, like sort of, it's, you get quite a lot of like symposium vase paintings. It's kind of a theme, and yeah, there are some of people kind of falling over or being sick, which are fun.
Because I can imagine, is it Bacchus who's the god of wine?
Yes, Xenia, I don't know if you want to cover Bacchus particularly. So Bacchus is the Roman version of Dionysus, the god of wine.
Oh yeah.
No, I think you go for it, Meg, because the Romans were extremely suspicious of Bacchus and his rituals, hence the illegality of women drinking. They were like, no, we can't have our women doing any of that.
That makes sense. So Dionysus was the god of wine, the god of kind of partying and ecstasy, and ecstasy as in having fun, not a drug. And he was meant to, the myth goes that he sort of brought wine to Greece. He was the sort of foreign god. He came from somewhere else and he brought wine with him. And the cult of Dionysus is all about drinking wine, kind of going a bit nuts, having the maenads are the women who follow Dionysus. And it's meant to be a sort of loss of control is a big part of that. There's wine as a sort of ritual drink is quite a big thing in Greece as well. I've already said how it can be a medicine. It can be part of kind of religious rituals. It was all over. Wine was a massive part of Greek life. In the Odyssey, you may remember the goddess Circe transforms Odysseus's men into pigs. The way she does that is that she mixes a pharmacon, which is a drug, and she puts it into a kokeon, which is the thing I was saying earlier, this mixture. And she gives it to them in within the wine. And then they turn into pigs.
I think that's more or less what the tonic wine that I'm drinking is the modern equivalent of.
Are you turning into a pig?
I was a pig before we started, to be honest. But no, with the Pharmacon, I think that's what that's the word I was thinking of earlier when I asked. Yeah. Because this has caffeine, iron, and a number of vitamins in it.
Oh, wow.
It's interesting because our current attitude towards alcohol is something that helps us let loose a little bit or de-stress or have fun. But in ancient times, it seems like the attitude was very more varied. It's more pharmaceutical, or it's religious, or it's to do with ceremony or status and standing. So it's quite interesting that the alcohol's existence has a very different attitude towards it based on where you are in time, but also geographically.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Greeks thought that the Scythians drank too much. So we've mentioned the Scythians a few times based on their tattoos and their fun trousers. But the Greeks thought that they were the kind of big drinking culture. You'd be like, oh, he's drinking like a Scythian this evening. He's getting wasted. So it's interesting, even within a society, which is very much, you know, wine is a massive part of it, they still have these attitudes about other societies drinking too much.
Yeah, that's quite a Greek concept, isn't it? The idea of med and agan, nothing too much. And for the Romans as well, like the idea of wine and drinking was very closely associated with what counts as being civilized and what counts as being uncivilized.
Exactly.
So Barney, could I find my Malbec or Merlot in the ancient Near East? Big wine drinkers there?
Well, certainly earlier on in ancient Near Eastern history and in world history, grapes or the vine hadn't been domesticated yet. So it's not really a big feature of the earliest period. Like, so when we're, you know, when we're associating beer with Mesopotamia, like worshipping beer, your beer goddess, all of that sort of thing, like that's, you know, that's 4th millennium BC. And you've got a lot of grains around at this time, but yeah, not so much talk about wine, or, you know, there's no talk about winemaking or anything like that. There's a little bit of evidence from Egypt, actually, about very fairly early wine in the tomb of none other than the Scorpion King, Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Wow.
one of the earliest, like, pre-dynastic kings of Egypt was called Scorpion.
Cool. That's sick.
Yeah. As in, it's not, yeah, like his name is just the sign of a scorpion, basically. So he's the Scorpion King.
Formerly known as Scorpion.
Exactly. Anyway, in the tomb of Scorpion, they found many, many hundreds of wine jars, and submitted those to chemical analysis, and they all had these like little rings around the inside of like a yellowy residue. So some liquid had obviously evaporated, and a lot of grape pips in them. And so they've not like definitively proved that it was wine in those jars, but the grapes is like a bit of a giveaway. But the interesting thing is that the clay that was used to make these jars was mostly from what we now know as the Middle East, and specifically Palestine and Jordan. So there's the idea that even in around like 3,200 BC, wine potentially was being imported to Egypt from Palestine. And so it must have been a big luxury, because, you know, it's enough to be in the grave of this, in the tomb, sorry, of this early king. And I just like the idea that, yeah, like, even, you know, in modern times, wine is a big, like, import-export kind of business. You know, beer is very much the local thing, and everyone's got their own beer. But, like, wine seems to make its way all over the world, especially wine from certain places like France and Italy and Germany, California, New Zealand. But, yes, even then, 5,000 years ago, over 5,000 years ago, wine was being exported from Palestine, an area that still has vineyards and still has winemaking going on to this day. So it's a nice little early wine story for you.
That's so cool. Did you mention a beer goddess earlier, Barney?
Yes, Ninkasi.
Oh, she sounds like I'd get on with her. Can we, what does she do? Do we have any stories from her?
Well, there's a good hymn to her. A very long hymn, which is basically like goes through the brewing process. And one of the theories is that this hymn was sung whilst people were brewing beer.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and so it's an oral, I think that the idea is that it's an oral tradition, but it was occasionally written down. And so there are a good few tablets attesting to the hymn to Ninkasi.
So if it describes the process, is the idea that it's also sort of a recipe, like a way of recording that information, or is it more?
It's like oblique, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's because it's dedicated to her. It's like, you are the one who wets the malt in a jar, and you're the one who spreads out the mash, and you're the one who filters the beer and stuff like that. Like, kind of, it goes through the steps.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, who put the colour in the rainbow? Sort of.
Ninkasi. Yeah. In the rainbow, in fact.
Yeah. In the rainbow.
I was going to say to myself, every time someone said grain, I was going to have a hit of sorghum.
Oh, like turn it into a drinking game.
Yeah, except a drinking game for one.
The saddest kind of drinking game.
It's like me at Eurovision.
So yeah, where was I? Okay, so I'm very excited for the stir fry that my husband is making me for after this, so I've got to go. But before we do, what was everyone's favourite boozy fact from the ancient world? Barney, I'm going to go with the grain gang first. What's your favourite boozy fact?
Yes, despite being grain gang, of the opinion that, according to the debate between sheep and grain, all people should submit to the yoke of grain, and from sunrise to sunset, the name of grain must be praised. Bearing all that in mind, my favourite fact from today was Xenia's multicoloured wines from the Roman source. Was it Pliny, Xenia?
Yeah, Pliny the Elder.
Yeah, sorry, obviously can't mix the Plinys up, that gets you in trouble.
Especially as I hate Pliny the Younger so much.
Yeah. yes, I very much liked the different and unusually named colours of wine from that source.
In which case, Xenia, I'm going to hop over to you. Your favourite boozy fact, please.
Well, I love the Greek cocktail, the kakaon, not to be confused with cocaine.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. I think that's my Christmas cocktail of choice.
I would honestly recommend it. Like, maybe cut the beer, but mixing a bit of red wine and mead. Great drink. Ooh. Really.
Is it equal parts? We should do a cocktail recipe. Is it equal parts?
I would say 2 parts red wine, 1 part mead, and then a splash of whatever beer you have to hand. That's the Meg approved recipe. That is not Homeric or Greek specific.
Fabulous, except hold the goat's cheese for me, please. I think I'll avoid having that. In which case, Meg, what is your favourite fact?
I just loved the... Was it Ninkasi, Barney, the Sumerian beer goddess?
Yep.
I love her. I think she sounds fantastic. And I love the idea of a song that is both a sort of a celebration of beer, but also kind of a recipe for making it. I think that's fantastic.
I'd share a Peroni with her for sure.
A Peroni. Yeah, I think it's like RIP Ninkasi. You'd have loved IPAs.
I'll pour one out for you.
Mm.
Yeah, I love that. I also, my favourite fact is that in the ancient Near East you could be paid in beer. I think that's great. I'm going to be formally requesting that HR henceforth at my job pays me in beer. I think I'll be more productive, certainly more happy, and I'll probably get a better work-life balance, I think. That's it. I'm already hungover. I'm going to go now. Thanks, everyone, and catch you next time in the new year for our podcast about pet peeves.